Hey everybody, welcome to the Green Architects Lounge Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Briley.
And I'm your host, Phil Kaplan. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Phil. How you doing?
I'm doing great today. How about yourself?
Man, really good.
Yeah. Excellent.
Special treat today, Phil.
Yes.
We've got a guest with us, Pat Kuhn.
Hi, I'm Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Hey,
how
Pat.
Are you?
Yeah, good, good, good.
And he's here because he's a specialist with solar.
I'm the solar guy.
Among other things.
Among other things. He's yeah. a solar guy for us. But, mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about solar hot water.
So, yeah. How convenient.
Yeah. So Pat's company is Revision Energy. And why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and Revision Energy?
So I started Revision Energy 10, 15 years ago. And back before solar was cool, oil was, I want to say, 85 cents a gallon.
Wow.
Back in those days. Mm-hmm. Nobody really cared. And
except for you.
Except for me. And I just made a lot of mistakes and fixed them. And then by the time I fixed most of my mistakes, solar was cool.
All right. So you've been through.
Yeah, I had good timing. So now we've got a bunch of crews, and we do a lot of commercial work and residential work. And
by a lot, you mean like about half of state of solar hot water installs in Maine?
Yeah, we do about half of the work in the state of Maine. Excellent. And we've got...
It's impressive.
Okay. Four or five crews doing solar hot water all the time.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds like an expert in the truest sense of the word.
Okay, but the best thing about Pat is that he brings beer. Thanks,
beer.
Pat.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
So our cocktail for the episode is actually... Wait.
It's homebrew.
It's a homebrew.
It's not just any beer.
It's a Belgian style.
It's Belgian white.
Does it have a name, Pat?
It's the Two Tinkers.
The Two Tinkers?
The Two Tinkers.
Tell us.
My kids, Elena's two, and she doesn't fully enunciate yet. So
yeah.
My wife called the two kids the Two Stinkers, and that became the Two Tinkers. So then Two Tinkers homebrew.
She was worried. She was going to think she was going to beep something. But
no, yeah, it's cool. Keep going.
Yeah, okay. Moving on. So, all right, let's get to it.
Yeah. Solar hot water.
Let's talk about solar hot. But so let's talk about the first question, Pat.
Oh,
people say solar.
I just remember, I have to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Because I was supposed to do announcements at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Tell us.
Yeah. Green building advice. I have a special... Wait, this just in. Wait, Sheila just handed me something. This just in. We've been picked up by the Green Building Advisor.
Oh!
Boy, those are lame sound effects. We're going to do some editing. All right. No, seriously, folks, the Green Building Advisor, which you can find at greenbuildingadvisor.com, has picked us up for a couple of episodes, and we're going to see how it goes.
Yeah, we're excited. We're big fans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's great. And so you guys, the best part is you can join in on the conversation. You can go to the blogs section, and you can click on the Design Matters blog, and where you'll find us. And after you listen to this podcast, you can hop in there and tell us where we went wrong and give your own two cents, because you guys are all brilliant. Most of you. Some of you are real slackers, but most of you are real brilliant guys doing great work and green stuff. So I'm sorry to interrupt you there, Phil, but that had to be done, or otherwise I'd totally forget.
That's okay. I'm sure it wasn't important. I'm just going to go back to my corner here.
Okay.
Can I come back?
No, you have valuable contributions.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll let you talk now.
Okay, I'll crawl back out.
Okay, Phil.
All right, so the first question, Pat, when people say, hey, I want solar on my house, you know, it's not quite that simple. I mean, it kind of is to us. But there's a couple different kinds of solar, right?
You got your solar electricity and your solar thermal.
Right.
Solar electricity makes...
Electricity?
Yes!
All right.
And solar thermal makes heat, usually for hot water, but you can use it in certain applications for space heat.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So that gets that out of the way, and we can get into sort of the nitty-gritty. There's also... We've got clients who are like, what are those tubes? Because there's plates and there's tubes. So... We're not doing PV panels. That's a different podcast. So now we're down to the basically plates and tubes. Where are the tubes, Pat? What was that funkiness?
Tubes. So the oldest technologies, I'll start with those, that are flat plates.
Sure.
And they're just insulated boxes with copper absorbers and copper tubes. the sun comes in, usually through a single pane of glass, sun comes in, turns to heat. That heat hits the absorber. The absorber transfers the heat to the antifreeze, typically, that runs through the tube in the flat plate panel. Very simple, very relatively inexpensive technology. The benefits of the flat plate technology, one nice thing about them is there's very little to go wrong, no vacuum to fail. They take up relatively little space on the roof. Where they don't shine quite so well is as they heat up, as they become hotter than the ambient air around them, they lose energy to the environment.
They just radiate it out.
They radiate heat out.
But that's good for melting snow in those cases where you have half the plate covered with snow.
Yes. And it becomes quite the design. Well, let me talk a little bit about the tubes, but then usually people ask the question: is, you know, are you guys tubes? Are you guys plates? And it's like there's religion around this. Like,
yeah, like I get that.
I'm a tube guy. I'm a plate guy.
Yeah. So which are you?
I'm an agnostic.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah,
it's
really a design question, and there's clear. Well, I shouldn't say there's clearly. There's a lot of places where we'll conflict, and the designers in our company will, you know, people will take a look at a project and they'll bat things back and forth, and sometimes, you know, two designers in the same company will land in different places, and you'll look at the numbers and you'll look at all the issues and you'll just disagree.
Interesting. So what percentage do you use of flat plates, and which percentage do you use the evacuated tubes?
I would say on residential projects we're probably 75% tubes, and on commercial projects we're probably like 75 or 90% flat plates.
Now, why is that? I'm curious.
Couple of reasons. Yeah. One, where the tubes. Let me skip back again.
Oh yeah,
and
what are
talk
tubes?
About the Tell tubes.
Me, what are those things? Those.
So they're usually about 7 feet long. Glass tubes, usually two layers of glass. Some of them have one layer of glass, and inside that evacuated tube and on the two layers of glass, the two layers of glass have a vacuum between them.
Like a thermos.
Like a thermos. Yeah. It keeps the heat in. Sunlight goes into that vacuum surface, lets the heat gets converted into the light gets converted to heat in an absorber, similar to the evacuated, to the flat plate. And then inside a copper tube, then there's water vapor that's also under a vacuum, boils at about 85 degrees. That steam, that low-temperature steam, rises into a bulb. That bulb then has antifreeze or some heat transfer medium that pulls the heat away.
Like, so, like a long box at the top of a manifold.
A manifold frame, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it works. So the benefits of the evacuated tube, there's a number of them. They're modular, so they're easy to carry. You can carry one component at a time. You don't have to carry a big 200-pound or 100-pound flat plate up. The tubes, when they get hot, they don't let the heat out to the environment. So they work better when the ambient, the temperature differential between what you're trying to heat and the outdoors is great. So they work better in the middle of winter. They work better in cloudy conditions. The other, in terms of installation, flat plates are much happier being flush mounted, whereas evacuated tubes are much easier to elevate off the roof.
Right. And you have to have some sort of particular angle.
Yeah. What are you shooting for each of these for angle?
Well, it's not quite that clear cut. You know, the ideal angle is often 45 degrees if you're looking to maximize.
Here in Maine.
That's right. This is broadcast.
That's
nation.
Right.
This is worldwide.
No, international.
Worldwide.
I've got an email from someone from Canada. So.
No Canada. Yeah,
it's from Paris. They keep hunting us down. We can't read it. But
We have no idea what they're saying.
Right. We think
but with all
like
those
you.
Exclamation points, I think they're excited. All right. So, the first time I held one of these tubes, I just like to tell the story because it kind of conveys how they work. But, you know, I was helping a friend who was part of a trade show, you know, loading out these tubes from the back of his van just as a little demonstration thing at a booth or something like that. And it was a nice, bright, sunny day, perfect for that. But, you know, I take it from this cold, dark van And I'm helping him pull it out. He's like, hey, you want to feel how these things work? And he just like tips his end down. He says, just grab hold of that bulb at the end. And I grab hold of that copper bulb. And it goes from stone cold to like too hot that I can't even hang on to it anymore in like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And that's when I had the epiphany of, wow, so that's how this...
Does this really work?
This tube really works.
It really does.
Yeah. You can never steal one of these things. You'd grab one and run away from it, and suddenly you'd have to scream and drop it.
Well, just the end. Yeah. Just that bulb. Which is the whole thing. It's like all that energy gets concentrated to that bulb that gets plugged in. It's pretty cool. All right.
So back to the angles. Very interesting. You're saying a typical 12-12 pitch would be ideal. Or in France, it would be 12 meter by 12 meter. I think it's the same. But here in New England, you see those all the time. It's not a big deal design-wise to get something that works really ideally.
Yeah. Okay, and then the flatter the roof, the more you're biasing for summertime production, and the steeper the roof, the more you're biasing towards wintertime production. So you have to ask yourself, when do I want the heat that this is going to generate? If your system's designed for space heating, you really want to elevate up past 45 degrees. 60 in this latitude is a nice place to be for space heating. If your main goal, if you're a restaurant and you're trying to get, you've got a lot of tourists in the summer, well, 45 degrees is too steep because when you really want the heat is in the middle of summer, so you're gotcha. You're flatter.
Oh, I see.
The other question is, what's the pitch of the roof? Flat plates are really much happier flush mounted because there's wind loading issues. As soon as you elevate them up, you're creating a sail.
Gotcha. I see. Yep.
So, I always thought it was because like the back side is now insulated, or it's the other side is the house as opposed to the outside ambient air temperature.
You might lose a little bit, but for me the real issue is the wind.
Interesting.
And you can design around it, but it's a design issue. You wouldn't want to take a lag bolt into a rafter and hope that that's going to keep the panel from blowing off in a 90-mile-an-hour wind, which is what we designed for.
Yeah, and it's sort of a little tangent, but it's kind of important to us as architects. It's nice to have the opportunity to have these things integrated with the roof.
Yeah.
So,
Or designed instead of just slapped on, which oftentimes they look that way, even when they are designed for, But,
well, either integrate them into the roof or put them in a roof that isn't as visible.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we've got lots of beautiful houses that have solar in the back. You never see it, literally never see it. But if you do see it, you want it to look like it was supposed, somebody meant to put it there. Mm-hmm.
So how much energy should I be like trying to take care of? A client comes to me and says, how much solar should I put on there? Cause there's sort of like a point of diminishing returns with solar hot water. Is there not?
Yeah. Well, okay. The first thing is to think about, a lot of people see it as the panacea. Like, I'm just going to do solar hot water. And I've had many, many really depressing conversations with clients, and they say, I want solar. And you go out. I remember one many years ago, and it was in construction, and they had 2x6 walls, and they were throwing fiberglass in it, and they wanted solar. And I was like, well, have you considered, doing a better wall? Mm-hmm. No, I'm just going to do solar. And I'll use that solar. Can I heat my house with solar? Can I?
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's a really bad place to look for the thermal energy to heat your house. The numbers just don't, for most houses, they don't work. So it's really important that a lot of other things, if your budget's tight and you can't afford to do the wall now and you want to do solar, you're crazy. Do the wall now and rough in your piping for the solar and do that later. But we just renovated we moved into a 1920s brick house, and it's cold in there, and we've started renovating and busting down walls and re-insulating. And in that process, I realized that my wall that I was ripping down is 88 years old. Like, that's how long walls last. Do you know how long do walls last, typically?
Well, like I remember being told that we should have a design time of 50 years, but I think if you told that to someone in Europe or Germany, they'd laugh because, that's... I mean, there are Japanese wood structures that are over 1,000 years old. Yeah. I mean, the same timbers and everything up there, they've just been, like, hardened by smoke and all that jazz. And they've just been well-protected, well-cared for, and they can always dry out. They're really old.
So. And how often do they yank out the plaster and rewire. And...
Oh, they don't have plaster. No, I don't know. I actually don't know those those houses. But
the point is that wall is there for a long time.
Yes.
And it kills me when I see, especially new construction, people not do as good a job as they can on the wall and think that solar's going to
save
it. Yeah, it's heartening to hear that coming from a renewable supplier, really, Pat.
Well, yeah, it is. Yeah, because they're always like, you know, just put more of my stuff up there and we'll get it done.
Yeah.
But if I came to you and said, I just want to take care of domestic hot water, because that's like on the typical household, I mean, that represents about 25% of the energy.
In Maine, a little less.
Yeah, in Maine, probably a little less. But in terms of, you know, the amount of, household consumption, right there, hot water. And so, I mean, is that like a reasonable goal, do you think? Is that like a good bang for the buck?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you can... I mean, the takeaway message is enough energy lands on your roof, most roofs, to heat your water. Not enough energy lands in your roof in the wintertime to heat your house. We can heat our hot water with the amount of energy that lands on the roof, no problem.
Right, yeah. Usually my clients, when we're talking about solar hot water, they seem to think, I'm going to do solar hot water, so that's the system, and then we'll just have a backup. And when really... solar hot water usually is in tandem with some other, if you're doing space heating or something else, you have another system for heat.
Yeah, and even for domestic, you need a backup as well. Right. But in terms of sizing, this is really important in the design phase, is you want to size a system that 6 months of the year does virtually 100% of the load. When you have the sun, you want to do virtually 100% of the load. One of the most common mistakes is people undersize systems. And it turns out the economics really go against you for a number of reasons. The most important one is you've run your pipes, you've gotten somebody on the roof, you put in a tank, and to make a system that's twice as big might cost 20% more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But as long as you're actually using that energy 6 months of the year, mm-hmm. you're at 100% for 6 months of the year, it's money much, much better spent. The other issue is, particularly when there are high mass boilers, mm-hmm. so an oil boiler that's 400 pounds of steel, they work really inefficiently in the non-heating season. The thermal efficiency of a high mass boiler is about 20%.
They're cycling on and off, and they've got this mass that's got to heat up.
And then that heat all goes up the chimney. As soon as the boiler shuts off, it starts sending heat up the chimney. Yeah. So the loss is fixed. So most oil boilers in Maine lose about 3/4 of a gallon a day just up the chimney. Hmm. Now, you're heating your house, you accept that loss. That's a relatively small percentage of the whole. But if you're only heating hot water, it's a huge percentage of the whole.
Right.
And if you can shut that boiler off for 6 months of the year, you've saved tons of energy. And so that becomes a really important design criteria. How big do I need to make the system to really shut the oil boiler off 6 months of the year?
Right.
And I'll tell the story. This is one of the, so I made a lot of mistakes and I learned from them. That's how did that's pretty much everything. You've been there?
No.
I've never.
Except for all those mistakes.
Right. Yeah, we don't talk about those. Right. Never look back.
But I had, when I realized this was, I had clients, one summer I had three clients call up and say, you saved us 300 gallons of oil. And we said, you're crazy. Our system only produces the equivalent of like 100 gallons of oil in the year. And they sent us their bills, and sure enough, we'd saved them 300 gallons of oil. And we looked at each of the systems. They were all the same. We had cold started their boilers and ripped out the existing tank that they had and put in a dual coil tank. Instead mm-hmm. of two tanks, they had just one tank. And we had aggressively sized their system. They were big systems, so that literally the boiler was off for 6 months of the year. And that's critical, because that's when the boiler's working at its lowest efficiency.
Right.
And so that's where you can gain the most.
And in the winter, where you're not gonna make it up with the solar, that boiler's on all the time.
You're just supplementing at that point.
Gotcha.
A BTU produced is a BTU saved.
Nice. Right. We're going to use that.
That's
all
good.
The time.
So, Pat, walk us through sort of a typical installation. Say, family of four.
Yeah.
In this climate, in the New England climate generally, What am I looking at? You know, how big is this system?
Yep.
And also, well, you know, what kind of loads does it handle, and what's the cost?
Yeah. Okay. We're going to have to get real.
Okay, so the first thing we look at is the roof. Do they have a south-facing roof? Is it within 45 degrees of solar south?
Mm-hmm. And 45 degrees, there's some loss with 45 degrees, but it's not that significant.
Yeah, it's about 5%, and it starts getting higher from there. We've done due west-facing roofs and just added more collector. And
does that have to do with are the flat plates better than the tubes?
When you start getting off solar south more, the tubes, you start weighing into tubes, mm-hmm. because the tubes have spaces between them,
yep.
mm-hmm. and the sunlight can hit. Imagine a tube and the sunlight coming in at an angle. The sun sees more of the tube.
Can you tweak the angle of the tube too?
Some of the tubes are directional, yeah. Sunda, I believe, mm-hmm. and others, most aren't.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you look for the south-facing roof. You look for a roof that doesn't have shade,
mm-hmm.
for at least 10 months of the year. You don't want to have any shade. If there's shade in the winter when there isn't as much sun, again, your system might not be at 100% efficiency, but it might be close enough. Okay, so then the average person uses about 20 gallons a day in hot water.
Wow.
So more people, bigger systems. We use, as a rule of thumb, 20 gallons of thermal storage per person as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to create that much energy or more with the collectors that we choose. So for the average family of four, say, they would need either two 4x8 flat plate collectors, mm-hmm. or two 30 tube collectors, which are about 7x7 feet,
gotcha.
of actual, yeah. dimension.
Okay. So about 100 square feet on your
roof.
Yeah. In terms of cost, it's going to cost something like between $10,000 and $12,000.
Of equipment? Or is that with
fully installed. That would be labor and equipment.
Pre-rebate.
And mm-hmm. that breaks about half and half is labor. We can install a system in about 35, 45 hours, depending on, you know, how the pipe run and the roof and all that. In Maine, we currently have, I think it's a $1,500 state rebate, and there's a 30% federal tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
So those help out. It brings the cost down to somewhere between $6,000 and $8,000 after incentives.
If I had a client who, because I've had clients who are kind of disappointed when we start talking about solar hot water, and they realize I'm only really talking about taking care of 25%.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when they started, they thought, I'm going to take care of
all exactly.
this. I'm going to be off the grid, and it's going to be beautiful. But, you know, then reality strikes in the way. So if I decided, hey, I want to do more. If I had a client who's just like, yeah, okay, well, I want to put more up there. Then I usually say, okay, now we're into space heating. It's a different beast. There's more complexity, you know, downstairs in the basement in terms of your equipment and the distribution. And so when that happens, what happens to the cost? Or what are you looking at for these proportions? I mean, because that's a difficult conversation to have.
It's quite complex. The first things we say to people are, don't even think about space heating unless, one, you're really doing a good job insulating your house.
Yeah.
And the things that need to come before solar space heat are, I'd say, R40 walls at a minimum.
Nice.
Very nice.
HRV. Definitely before. Right. So getting the loads down.
And air sealing.
Air sealing.
I'll throw Martin Holliday, who's on the Green Building Advisor. If you go to greenbuildingadvisor.com, they've got a great, you know, the food pyramid. They've got the energy renovation pyramid, or even the.
I just saw that.
Yeah,
the other day.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm going to steal that slide and credit Martin and use it all my presentations, or whatever, because it's really great, because it illustrates that point. It's like. You know, you want to run right up there and have the filet mignon, you know, which is your solar panels. But really, there's a lot of rice and vegetables to eat first.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of, you got to eat your vegetables. You got to do what's, you know.
I mean, the solar is, I think of it as often thought, it's often the flag. It's what is visible. It's what, you know, emotionally, like, I'm producing energy.
Yeah.
It's exciting in a way that air sealing just honestly isn't, right?
Yeah, a lot of my presentations, I end with a photo of the guys installing, you know, like
the solar panels.
The solar panels. Because it's like I walk out and go, hey, guys, and they're all smiling.
Yeah.
And they all like, you know, they all huddle around it like it's a, you know, like a, you know, it's like if they were just like putting up, you know, installing a window, I'm like, hey, guys.
Yeah, right.
Cheers. They look at me like, hey,
right.
Nuts.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah. So there's that something about it that you really feel. It's a good feeling, sunshiny feeling I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's your beer. but it's good. So I'll tell you what, let's take a short break.
Well, oh yeah.
Oh, no. Well, go ahead.
Okay, so it's finishing up the space heating conversation.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
and then I have one more.
Oh, okay.
So you need the wall, you need the HRV, you need low temperature distribution. That's really important. And down into the... So... We're not talking baseboards now. We're talking
radiant slabs or something.
Radiant slabs, maybe okay with staple up, but yeah. You know, in staple up, the temperatures are getting up there. So radiant slab is the best application. You need the most efficient boiler that makes, you know, you don't do solar before you get the modulating condensing gas boiler. Right. And this is really important. I've seen so many systems that aren't well designed and integrated, mm-hmm. and are just really poorly engineered. And when you're talking about, you know, spending all this money, and even if you do all these things first, you get to a system that hasn't been well thought out, that the gas boiler is coming on all the time anyway.
Yeah.
It takes some thought to design, and I really honestly caution people against that space heating application for solar thermal, unless they've got somebody who's done a lot of them before and can really stand behind it.
Because it takes some real commitment and some real design work to make that happen, not just well, I'll slap up more panels.
Right,
And do more heat, more, right. Take care of more money.
I'll put in a giant tank, and what if I have a 5,000-gallon tank? And
what if I go to 10?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I'll do twice as good. Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about we'll start with the dreaded P word. Payback.
Oh,
you know,
God.
We hate this, but everyone asks that.
So no. That's the language everyone uses. Yeah.
You know, even I do. It's right after, oh, how much is this going to cost per square foot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know,
square foot. Don't get me
asking
started.
Asking the wrong questions. Yeah.
Right.
Homes.
Right.
But, Pat, people ask you that all the time. I know they do. You know, what's the payback of this?
Right.
What do you say?
Okay, so here's first, we're... you know, among the design crowd, among the people that are out talking to clients about energy, this is one of my pet peeves. We need to very quickly steer the conversation away from the term payback, because the term payback is the wrong term. And I don't say that from like an eco geek perspective. I say that from, like, my father's an accountant. I say that from an accounting perspective.
Wow.
Because the payback, the idea of a payback is, okay, you spend $10,000 and it saves you $1,000 a year on energy costs. That's the back of the envelope, rough and dirty number. And you say, oh, it's a 10-year payback,
yeah.
Right? Well, okay, that's really misleading at first, because it makes you think that you have to sit around for 10 years waiting for something to happen. And then at this magical time, 10 years from now, you'll have paid back.
Right, and then it's free.
And then it's free. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is that, assuming what cost of energy? Are you assuming,
today's cost of energy?
Right. Okay, well, look, there's some huge demographic trends that are pushing the price of energy up. None of the demographic trends are pushing the price of energy down. The population's getting more. What population there is using more resources, and the resources are dwindling. All of those things are huge mountains that are pushing the price of energy up. So why would you pick today's price of energy? That's completely random.
And because you know it.
Because you know it. Right. It's easy to fit in the back of the envelope, but it's completely an unrepresentative. And honestly, it makes less difference with the solar panels than it does with the wall. Because the wall you're stuck with for the 88 years. With the solar panels, at least you can pop them up when the price of energy gets high. But making those long-term energy investments based on today's price of energy without looking at these big demographic trends that are in place is crazy. But the other thing to think about is return on investment is a much better metric to use.
Yeah, we say that all the time.
But don't say payback. Say return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
that's the metric that makes sense. How quickly is this? That 10-year payback has a 10% return on investment, right? Yeah. You're taking that $10,000 and getting $1,000 back every year. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And if we phrase it that way and let people understand it, that this is a financial investment that they're making, we'll be much more likely to make good, sound financial investments.
Right. Yeah. One thing I always, you know, is I ask, well, how, are you getting a 30-year mortgage for this thing? I mean, because a lot, right. you know, a lot of people, you know, they'll put some money down, you know, it's a construction loan, put some money down, then they get a loan for the rest, and that's, you know, over 30 years. So it's sort of like you're going to immediately increase the value of your house, you know, from day one. And like you said, this you know, renewable system is going to start offsetting your immediate costs from day one. And, you know, your amortization is over 30 years. So, you know, if you put on your accountant hat and start doing that, then all of a sudden, oh, it makes sense. And then they walk away and feel like, hey, did he just pull one on us? You know, did he just, you know, do work numbers magic to make it look, you know, to argue his case? But, you know, I think there's that immediate return on the investment. It's saving you now.
Right. I mean, and that's the other really important one to push towards. And the way I think about it is it cash positive today? City of Portland just did something really exciting. They did an ESCO.
Yeah.
But often with the ESCO, what's ESCO stand for? Energy Service Performance Contract, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, with a P? No, that's okay. we'll look it up during the break.
Okay, we'll Google it.
Google it, yeah. Sheila will do that.
Thanks, Sheila.
Thank you, Sheila.
But what most people do when they do these ESCOs is they pluck the lowest hanging fruit and get things with really quick returns. Mm-hmm. What the city of Portland did was they said, we want to be break even year one. We want to do as many projects as we can and mm-hmm. work our way down up the food pyramid.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And so that when the very first year, when we start paying interest and principal on the loan, and we're saving energy, those two things cancel out.
Exactly.
Because what happens the second year? The price of energy goes up,
yeah.
And now all of a sudden they're putting money in the bank. So mm-hmm. the concept is, what is cash positive year one? If it's break even year one, chances are good in the life of the investment, it's going to be a really sound one because of these, more mice, less cheese is what I...
More mice, less
more
cheese.
We got more mice, we got less cheese. What's going to happen to the price of cheese? It's going up.
Yeah.
So make it cash neutral the first year, and you've got a really good investment.
Fantastic.
That's great. It's really good talk. Thank you, Pat.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back for the next half of the show.
No, half. I'm kidding.
You're listening to the Green Architects Lounge podcast, hosted by Chris Briley and Phil Kaplan. Chris is the principal architect at the Green Design Studio in Yarmouth, Maine. And Phil is a principal of Kaplan Thompson Architects in Portland, Maine. The theme music is Zelda's Theme by Perez Prado. If you'd like to request a topic for the program, would like to comment on a previous episode, or if you just want to let us know you're listening, Chris and Phil would love to hear from you. You can email them at galounge@yahoo.com. Now back to the Green Architects Lounge.
And we're back. With us again, in case you went to the bathroom or something there and forgot, you know, I don't know. Pat Kuhn from Revision Energy is with us. I'd like to take this time to say that if you want to contact us, you can always contact us at galounge@yahoo.com. But a funner place is after this airs on the Green Building Advisor to go to thegreenbuildingadvisor.com. Log into the Design Matters blog and join in the conversation and let them know that you like the podcast. If you don't like the podcast, please go to foxnews.com. If you have a problem with their programming. So, Pat.
Yes.
Let's talk about, we're talking about solar thermal, of course, and what could go wrong? Where are some common mistakes out there? Maybe mistakes... Okay. You know, from your past. Your past.
Maybe. Yeah.
Or maybe what you've seen others do.
Yeah, I haven't actually... Made any mistakes myself.
We recorded what you said before.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, the fun thing about being in a new industry is there's nobody to call, right? Like,
yeah.
Does this work?
right.
Well, I guess I'll put it up and I'll see. Right. So that's what we did. Well, let me start with what doesn't fail.
Everybody asks the question, is my roof going to leak? And I don't know.
Really?
Everybody. Nah, maybe not a lot of people.
Okay.
But they'll, of the, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 roofs we have, we've not had a single roof leak.
Because they just imagine you're going to drill something through to their roof and walk away.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow, that's great.
We had a call the other day. A guy was convinced that, you know, he called up. There's water rushing into my.
It's
pouring down, and we were like, "I'm really sorry, but you know, it could have been us. I'm not going to say it isn't us, but
unlikely.
It's very unlikely, and it's pretty. It turns out it's pretty easy to seal all the kinds of penetrations that you have.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the one thing that. Seems to go well. The things that can go wrong, actually, solar hot water is pretty tricky because you've got a large elevation difference. So getting air out of the system, bubbles get trapped in the system, and if they can't get out of the system, the pump can no longer pump through an airlock.
And what happens when that goes wrong? I mean, it's not catastrophic, but it's, or is it?
It can be, depending on how the rest of the system was put together. But if you can't pump through the system, you can't take the heat away.
Ah, so it can really build
and
up.
Then you can wreak havoc. So getting the air out is really a tough thing.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure the system doesn't leak in your oil boiler or gas boiler. You've got something called a fast fill that introduces more water into the system if a little leak lets a little bit of water out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't do that with a solar system because you'd be diluting the antifreeze mixture.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be constantly letting water in. When too much water came in, it would then freeze.
Hmm.
So making sure you get systems that are really, really leak-free is another huge challenge. The first one, getting the air out, we found the best way to do it is using a scrubber in the basement. We used to put high vents on the roof, but the first time the system stagnates, which means it goes to steam, you know, power failure on a nice sunny day, all of a sudden you've got 350 degree antifreeze on your roof. If you've got a little piece of plastic up on the roof that lets the air out, well, that distorts and melts and then lets all the glycol out.
Right.
So we use a micro bubble remover in the basement, and that seems to do a really good job. And then also filling the system, the tricks to making sure you get the bubbles out there. What else?
How about solar dump? I hear that. I mean, even while I'm working on projects, like the client will figure out, oh, you're supposed to provide or do this, you know, they do their homework, and you're supposed to have a solar dump. You're supposed to take a solar dump. So I had to say it. I'm sorry, Sheila. You have to take
that out, please.
Yeah. So when you have this solar dump, I mean, some of your systems today, I mean, you don't need to do that, or you have that same need to deal with the issue
of overheating.
Yeah. Even
okay. So the problem can happen in normal circumstances when someone goes away for a week in August and it's really sunny and the tank just heats up. And a well-designed system will overheat after about 3 or 4 days, really hot days of no use. So, you know, at the end of the first day, it'll be 140 degrees in the tank. The end of the second day, 160. Then when the tank hits 210 degrees, the pressure temperature relief at the top blows. And when a pressure temperature relief valve blows on temperature, it generally empties the whole tank. So there's 80 or 105 or 160 gallons of
steam,
of really hot water.
Yeah.
The question is, how do you avoid that from happening? The other things that can happen is you can have a pump fail, you can have a sensor fail, or you can have power fail. Any of those things will stop heat from being removed from the system. And this is one of the biggest problems, the biggest challenges of solar hot water that we struggled with for years. And for a long time, every time there was a power failure on a sunny day, we would get 8 phone calls and we'd have to go out and recharge 8 systems because they dump the antifreeze all over the basement and make a big mess.
Yikes.
But then we kind of came up with something called Steamback, which was really a huge innovation. What Steamback does is when any of those things go wrong, the tank gets too hot, so the pump shuts off, the power fails, the sensor fails, whatever, the system is simply designed to passively absorb the steam that is created on the roof. And it really doesn't take that much. You just properly size an expansion tank mm-hmm. and put it someplace where on the right side of the check valve, essentially, so that the steam from the roof pushes down into the system and that fluid goes into the expansion tank.
Right. And it's not that much. I mean, like, people think that, oh, I've got this evacuate, all these evacuated tubes up there. There must be gallons and gallons and gallons of water up there, when really there's not, right?
Right. And 5 gallons, typical system size. And when the collectors go to steam, mm-hmm. basically about a teaspoon of fluid in vapor form is left in the collectors. And all the rest of the antifreeze goes down where it won't get hurt. The problem is not that the copper will, you know, 350 degrees isn't anything to copper. It's nothing to solder. It's nothing right. It's just something to antifreeze. And if it doesn't push out and get out of there, it will degrade the antifreeze.
Right.
The antifreeze will become acidic and then start attacking the copper. So that's where you have to do something. And for a while we did a bunch of dump systems. Mm-hmm. We did passive dumps. We did active dumps. We had ground loop dumps. And then we just came up with this thing called Steamback, and it solved all the problems and has been working really well for 3 or 4 years now.
Great. Well, I've got a.
Is it a hot zig or is it a?
No, it's a 6-digit idea.
Okay.
That's what I've got.
I'm not entirely sure of the difference.
Well, I might have a hot zig for you.
This is a 6-digit idea.
Mine's a 6-digit idea, which means, I'm glad you asked, Pat.
Yeah.
All right, well, we should have a sound effect for this. I've got a 6-digit idea.
Ka-ching!
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, maybe we'll find a real one. Sheila's on that. Anyway, yeah, it feels like, nah. All right.
I like that.
Okay.
Cha-ching.
Okay. And that is basically an idea that would make you, if you took it, ran with it, turned it into a business, you'd make at least 6 digits.
Okay.
Or more off that. So, actually, you know, now I think about this, this is going to be hard-pressed to make 6 digits. Maybe 4.
5.
5. 4. I don't know. Okay. Splash pots. Yeah, Thessy, blank expression. What are you talking about, man? Okay, do you know how many times I'm not a fan. You're not a fan of gutters, right, Phil?
No.
Okay.
Very infrequently.
Right, and same here. And up here in the north, that's basically because if you've got ice dams and things like that, gutters are kind of to be shunned because they just collect debris and, yeah, you know, ice and all that. And
that's problems to happen.
Right, if you handle dewatering of your site really well, then you don't need them. But because I am an architect and we tend to do this, we always seem to push all the water, shed it right off where you enter the house. I don't know. I try to avoid it like the plague, but mm-hmm. it seems like 50% of my houses, you enter right where, I don't know, all these water things. So you put a gutter over just where you're walking. And so because I despise gutters, I just want to have an open end, you know, an open end gutter. Because I don't want the downspouts, you know, plugging up and all that jazz and, you know, what a mess. And plus, they're ugly. Downspouts are ugly. I can make a gutter look nice, but the downspouts are harder. So here it is. You have an open gutter across, like an entrance or across an area. And so the water is now concentrated and it comes out. And it hits the ground. And you need something to catch it, right? And, you know, you've seen water chains, you know, that's kind of seems like a, you know, I kind of like those sort of when they freeze, but otherwise, I don't know, dorky, but that's not, I'm okay. Anyway, but imagine like a vase, a nice, beautiful, like urn, like vase or whatever, but at the bottom is drilled out and there's like a plumbing fitting so it can, you know, fasten to your drain tile and go to the drain system around your house. So you've got these little pots that can handle stormwater retention and they you know, so like the water can just splash in them and be completely harmless and nice, and they look good, and splash pots.
I did one.
No.
Yeah. Oh.
see, I did. Okay, yeah, but wouldn't it be cool? Like, see, I've done.
How
one.
Much richer are you for it?
Yeah, exactly. But you didn't take it to market. And
negative.
All right. No, that's great. Yeah. So it's a really
and
original
we actually
idea.
Did we tried the chain, actually, and the chain didn't really work really
Oh, really?
Well. We were sort of suspicious of it. And didn't trust it, so we actually ended up making a downspout. We made it out of Corten steel, and it looked kind of
nice.
Beautiful.
Wait, it was a downspout?
Yeah.
But he's not talking about downspouts.
No, but then it ended up in it sort of stopped short of the splash pot.
Well, and that,
then there was a hole that actually led to the dry rain tile. And
right, but you had to make it yourself. You had to cobble it together.
Why
can't I go to Home Depot and choose a beauty? Well, maybe not Home Depot. But yeah, sure. Go to a nice place. You know, go to the lawn and garden center. There's a beautiful, you know, pot thing. But on the bottom, there's a nice little fitting for.
Dude, you could make four digits on that.
Yeah,
at least make a grand.
So wait, I'm still confused. Does the water come out horizontally or vertically?
Well, okay, like you have a gutter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And usually there's ends to a gutter and then it goes down a downspout.
Yeah.
But I like an open gutter, which means there's no ends. It just, you know, the water, I'm gesticulating with my hands. No one out there can see. I'm doing it for Pat.
I can see.
Okay. So like the water fills the gutter and just pours out the ends. It just, so you can walk under where the gutter is and not get rained on.
But it doesn't turn down. It just goes out.
No, it just goes out. But now the water needs to fall harmlessly in a nice little pot.
I was smiling because as you were describing it, it was the exact situation at this house I didn't doubt with. But he had a hidden gutter, and then we didn't have the downspout. We had the chain at first, and we had the drop pot.
Nice. Great minds think alike. Awesome. And by the way, Pat is the man who single-handedly shot down one of my nice six-digit ideas from an earlier podcast. I was that happy red balloon from that beautiful book from long ago. Pulled out a howitzer, and just shot it down.
Yeah, that one wasn't a very good idea, I don't think.
Well, yeah, share with my list. Okay, so I'm like, oh, we got this new podcast. It's, you know, six-digit idea, blah, blah, blah. Hey, I got a great idea, Pat. Here's how it went. I'm like, Pat, it's the leaf baler. Yeah, a leaf pelletizer, basically turning your lawn waste into fuel. And then he says...
What did I say?
Oh, it's you're telling me bad ideas. What you said?
Yeah. So leaves, when you look at fuel, there's an ash content, and the more bark and leaves you get in pellets, for example, the higher the ash content, the lower the fuel value. And leaves, I don't know, but I'm guessing that leaves would be like 50% ash content. So you just smolder and burn.
All right. I'm depressed.
Makes great. I mean, we compost our leaves and
exactly. Yeah, that's
makes
okay.
So great compost mixer.
So what's another place for it? Can I try one?
Yeah, please.
Let me run this by Pat.
Is this the six digit idea or
this is the hot zig?
All right, hot zig. Which we don't have a.
All right, so I preliminarily designed this into a project. So hopefully you can tell me whether it's a really bad idea. Solar hot water. Evacuated tubes, using them not just as overhangs, but using them as a trellis. We had a trellis design. And I said, you know, and then we were going to put the solar hot water on top of it. I said, why don't we get rid of the wood? And why don't we just double the manifolds and remove every other tube? So the thing would have more space in between the tubes.
Well, why do you feel like you need more space? I'm just
playing. Because it looks cooler.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's space in between because it approximates the rhythm of the actual sticks in the trellis, as opposed to one right up against the other. And you'd have some light filtering through.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be solid. It would just feel lighter.
But you'd need to buy twice as many manifolds.
For your... Right, for the same number of tubes. That can be done.
So it's like here.
Yeah.
He's gesticulating again.
Yeah, he's got his hands up.
And you want light down below?
Yeah, you see, if you could see what I'm doing now, I have my fingers together. You know, here's the church, here's the steeple.
I was just going to say, and there's the people.
All right, so my fingers are together, the church and the steeple, and I move one hand out of the way.
The church falls down.
This is going nowhere.
You're not a structural engineer. I don't want to even hear it from you.
What he's saying is he wants light. He wants to walk under
that. No, that'll work.
Yeah.
That'll work.
Yeah. What's another a manifold, extra grand or something in the whole?
Less.
Yeah. All right.
You're all right.
I like it. It's gonna look cool.
It will look cool. I'm excited to see
how
that
turns out.
You'd have to plug the manifolds of the.
Yeah.
You lose a lot of heat otherwise.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, folks. That's it for this episode. Thank you, Pat, for sharing beer, and thank you, Phil. You have to do your last segment and take us out with a song. What do we got?
Last but not least, I always end this thing, Pat, but you know, I hope people make it to the end because they're little jewels that I'm very proud of.
What's today's jewel?
Today is Joanna Newsom.
Ah.
I don't know if you know Joanna Newsom, but I think she's in the Drag City label. Mm-hmm. Harp. She plays harp. Beautiful. Oh,
my daughter plays harp.
Does she really?
Yeah, she does. Yeah, she's getting good at it.
Maybe she'll like this then.
Oh, that great! I'm excited.
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
Really, just theatrical and very interesting and intricate music. And if you know Kate Bush, you remember Kate Bush? For some reason, she always reminded me of Kate Bush, especially this new album.
Like her voice? Or like...
Yeah, you have to hear it.
Okay.
You'll hear it in a second. Anyway, the new album, it's actually a triple CD.
Oh, boy.
How awesome is that? It's called Have One on Me.
Excellent.
It's been much anticipated. And the song is called 81. And it's sort of apostrophe 81, like 1981.
Oh, it makes it harder to look up.
That's right.
Okay. On iTunes. Okay.
So look it up on iTunes. Joanna Newsom, 81. Chris, Pat, it's been a pleasure.
Bill, Pat.
Cheers.
Cheers. See you later, everybody.
Bye-bye.
I tilled it with my two hands and I called it my very own. There was no one to dispute my claim. Well, you'd be shocked at the state of things. Cleared right out. It was harder than hell, so I lay me by the spring for a spell as naked as a drought. Oh, no.